Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert. For the next hour and a half, we're going to go through all of the sports, I think. I think we might be able to grasp every single one of the main ones. We got Arash Madani from the Super Bowl to kick things off in about 10 minutes. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic to go a little Four Nations face-off preview at 6:30. Daniele Franceschi, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, because we got Raps OKC. And you know what? We'll just say the words, go Blue Jays.
Because we're not
and then we've got all four.
We're not doing Blue Jays, but I do want to say, I mean, Max Scherzer was unveiled to the media today. Brandon Ingram, a little more subtle, but unveiled to the media
Big
today.
Big unveiling day.
Like, kind of cool. Like, two guys I never really thought about in terms of, hey, you're going to be a Toronto athlete. You're going to be an athlete for a Canadian franchise. An interesting day with Scherzer officially in the fold and Brandon Ingram.
He's in the fold. He's on the Raptors
to a certain degree. He's hanging out in OKC, but I think he did a little something to endear himself with his very few words and low volume in his session
laugh,
with the media today.
Right?
Great laugh. I don't know if we have the laugh.
Can we
get to
the laugh
a little bit later, but we might have the next Kawhi laugh through this Ingram laugh because we had a laugh at it, so I found it humorous.
Lots of laughs. Okay, we'll save the laugh. We'll tease the laugh for later in the show. We'll be up for an hour and a half here on your Friday night. On the network after us, it's Pittsburgh and New York and L.A. and Dallas. So two big games in the NHL landscape on Sportsnet. And then Sportsnet 1 will have Toronto and OKC and the return of Chet Holmgren.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Like, it's always circled OKC Raptors. That's one of the more interesting games. But Chet Holmgren giving OKC its full form. Going to be an exciting night to watch the 20-point favorite OKC Thunder. And the Toronto Raptors.
Of course. It's also UFC 312 this weekend, so there's another sport. Check mark that. We'll go through that. Last games here before the Four Nations. We've got some injuries to keep an eye on. Sidney Crosby did not practice or not play, so we're going to keep an eye on when Sid might or might not be back on the ice. And, of course, Quinn Hughes still not playing. Super Bowl, though. Super Bowl takes probably the cake from everything we just talked about this weekend. Sunday, the big game. We are looking forward to hearing what Arash has been up to in New Orleans. But we haven't had much time this week. It's been crazy. NBA trade deadline. I think it overshadowed a little bit of the Super Bowl week, unless you love consuming like those 30-second TikTok and Instagram videos of people asking the players silly questions. Other than
you're quite miffed by that.
I just think it's just like, it's a bit icky.
Okay.
It's like Travis Kelce, like, what's your favorite? One of Taylor Swift's cats. It's just like, ask the guy about football. Anyway, whatever. I would probably be pumped to be there, so maybe I'm just a little bitter. Nonetheless, Super Bowl preview. We've got a couple days before it happens. What's like the biggest thing on your mind as we look at the Chiefs and the Eagles on Sunday?
Well, just before that, I wanted to mention, because there has been some fatigue and it has been a busy week, but you and I have been doing shows together now for three Super Bowl cycles, and we've seen exactly three teams play in those Super Bowls.
Oh.
And I think that's part of it, right? Like, we've broken down this matchup before. Mm-hmm. We've done the Chiefs every single time we've talked about a Super Bowl on this network. So I feel like that's part of it. And clearly the Chiefs fatigue thing is something that's real. But I think one of the main storylines is that this is like a legitimate pursuit of excellence.
Yes.
And I think it will have our attention in the end if Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs are down three with the ball with 2 minutes left. It's like, that is going to be a epic moment that everyone's going to be there for, either to cheer on potentially the downfall and a rare mistake made, like an impossible mistake made in a big, big moment for that team. Or they just cement themselves as maybe the best team ever, but maybe the most clutch team in the history of sports, given that they've played exclusively close games during this entire run, at least it seems, where it could be hanging in the balance or depend on one single moment. Go back to Chad Henne completing fourth downs while Patrick Mahomes goes out. And, of course, their path towards the title through Buffalo just this season alone. Like, they have had an answer for the test every single time. And I just hope we get an opportunity to see if they can rise to that occasion one more time. Whether or not they succeed or fail, it will be fascinating.
I think the legacy stakes are so huge for Patrick Mahomes and Saquon Barkley. If I think of two people that can have a legacy-defining game, I think it's those two. But Patrick Mahomes, for obvious reasons, like leading a team to a three-peat, doing something that no one else has ever done in the Super Bowl era, and doing it with a team that I think a lot of people think are weaker than previous iterations of Kansas City Chiefs teams that we've seen. I think there is so much at stake for him to solidify I am Patrick Mahomes, maybe the best that we'll ever see. Is he better than Tom Brady? Like, and Tom Brady's calling the game. I just think there's so much legacy on the shoulders in the palm of the hand of Patrick Mahomes. But I also think if we're talking about legacy stakes, like Saquon Barkley has such an awesome opportunity to really just stick it to former team, to stick it to people that didn't believe in him, to have his moment on his birthday. Remember, I told you that a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It's his birthday on Sunday. And to take a team like the Eagles to the top, to dethrone the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, I think it's through those two where I view the most exciting legacy moments at play. And I think those are the obvious answers. That's why X factors are always fun to kind of go through because, duh, if Saquon Barkley plays amazing and sets a bunch of records, they'll probably win. If Patrick Mahomes does the other thing, yeah, the Chiefs will probably win. So it's so much more than that. But those two guys coming in, like, I just feel like you can really cement who you are in this league in one game.
They are the names on the marquee, but I'm surprised that you circle Saquon and don't mention Jalen Hurts, because I feel like as brilliant as Saquon is, he actually can't do it himself.
That's true.
Like, he needs the offensive line to block. Like, he can make something. He can turn 5 yards into 8 because of his brilliance. Maybe he can not lose yardage and just pick up a couple and prevent some negative plays just on the skill and talent alone. But he is somewhat beholden to others playing well. And the same goes for Jalen Hurts, I assume. But with Steve Spagnuolo and probably the best minds in football, that being the coaching staff for the Chiefs, led by Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, like, they can game the system in a way to take away Saquon Barkley. They can make him irrelevant if they so choose, mostly irrelevant if they so choose, and just basically dare Jalen Hurts to beat them through means that he has not always been consistently effective in. And I wonder if they're going to be able to scheme up a system where it does come down to whether Jalen Hurts cannot be Patrick Mahomes, but can be good enough to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And he played one of his best games as a pro in the Super Bowl. They lost to the Kansas City Chiefs. And part of that might have been by design, where it's like, okay, Jalen, let's see if you can beat us tonight. They didn't have Saquon Barkley then, but I think Jalen Hurts, despite all the success, all the wins, all the stats, MVP consideration in the past, there are still so many detractors with him as well. And I wonder, with a team built so perfectly, rosters on both sides of the ball that are just immaculate and really without flaw, if they don't win, that's because of Jalen Hurts. And for that reason, if we're talking legacy stakes, I mean, you can't really take away the money that he's going to win and the success that he's had, but this may be the last crack at it, because only elite quarterbacks generally get this opportunity multiple times. And I think the word is out there, or the question is still there, of whether or not he's even way above average.
Yeah, I think
as a quarterback,
when we do those quarterback tiers, he's a confusing one at times, right?
You throw him on the Jacksonville Jaguars and it's like, it's not much better than what's actually going on there in Jacksonville, right? Same can't be said about Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, et cetera.
Exactly. Like, you can pick a lot of these young Super Bowls, some of these young quarterbacks, and you can determine which type of tier they're in. This is an opportunity for him to put himself in a tier that only a few can be in. He can lead your team to a Super Bowl and do it this Sunday. I think he's definitely a factor and a legacy stake. You think that the Chiefs are going to win?
I do.
So how does that get disrupted for you?
If the Eagles get an early lead.
Yeah.
I think that's the way the Eagles win the game, because I think the Chiefs are built, despite who really the opponent is, to play in one-score games. We've seen it all year long.
They win one-score games.
And they win. They know how to win. They know how to make the last play, whether it's offensively or defensively. They know how to make the last play. But let's say Barkley runs in a 50-yarder to open the game, and they barely got their feet wet. And then there's a drop or a deflection interception, and suddenly it's 14-0, or the Eagles have the chance to go up 2 scores. If it's in that scenario, I don't know if Kansas City's built to win that sort of game. So that's what would make me most concerned about the Chiefs. On the flip side of that, if it's a close game throughout, I'm going to favor the Chiefs, because they always find a way to do what they do, whether or not it's schemed up by Steve Spagnuolo, or schemed up by Andy Reid and executed by Patrick Mahomes.
All right. Let's ask the man on the ground, Arash Madani, joining us from New Orleans. Arash, appreciate you jumping on. How's it going down there?
Everything's good, Ailish. We're getting ready now. Practices are done. Mm-hmm. Each team has one more walkthrough tomorrow, a final team meeting, and then the long wait for 5:30 local time, 6:30 Eastern, when they put that ball on the tee Sunday.
Okay, so practice is done. We've been hearing a bit about Jalen Carter being potentially under the weather, maybe some other Eagles. Was it a full practice for the Eagles? Can we allay the concern that we might not have the best Super Bowl because of an illness going around?
Yeah, full participation for both teams, actually. And to me, the more intriguing story of the Super Bowl that hasn't gotten a lot of pub is Brandon Graham, the defensive end for the Eagles, who's been a heart and soul player for them. 15-year vet, tore his triceps at the end of November. Everybody thought his season, maybe his career would be over. And then about 6 weeks later, he got range of motion back in his arm and his shoulder. He could do push-ups without issue. He attacked his rehab aggressively. He started going around the locker room telling guys, hey, let's get to the Super Bowl, I'll be there with you. Has practiced full last week and this week. One of the better defensive lines in all of football, with Jalen Carter there in the middle. May have BG there on the edge. Remember, against the Patriots, when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, Brandon Graham made one of the defining defensive plays of that game. He may be in, suiting up out of nowhere on Sunday against Kansas City, which would be a huge add to Philly's defense.
Okay, that sounds like an X factor, Arash. So I'm going to ask you on the other side, who on the Chiefs do you anticipate being like a sneaky X factor? Someone like that needs to perform big on Sunday other than Patrick Mahomes if they want to have the big time three-peat?
So this is going to be a boring, bland answer, but I think the most important player on the football field on Sunday is going to be a three-time Super Bowl champion who had never played left tackle until, out of necessity, Joe Tooney got thrown out there because of injuries on Kansas City's offensive line. Like, we're talking about an interior lineman who's used to having people on both sides of him for help, and now he's out there on an island against a bunch of young pass rushers who come at him in a hurry. I mean, we're talking about somebody who got to three straight Super Bowls with Tom Brady. He's got two rings in Kansas City. How they attack Patrick Mahomes' blind side, to me, is going to be very intriguing, with a veteran who'd never been out there before. And so, how Philly's defense is going to deal with Mahomes is obviously critical, and how they're able to block Mahomes is just as important.
Arash, you've been to a few of these. You've been a few media rows and everything that goes into the lead up to the Super Bowl. There's a busy week in the NBA. Luka Doncic setting the table for a pretty entertaining trade deadline. It's got other people's attention, I suppose, but part of it might be that there's a bit of a fatigue with the Kansas City Chiefs. Is it felt in NOLA at all that, a lot of the people who are commenting online are just general fans of the sport, are tired of seeing the Chiefs? Has that manifested itself in any way in the atmosphere that surrounds the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I don't know about the atmosphere. The players are definitely getting questions about it. I mean, Travis Kelce joked about it. He's like, what, there's hate around us? Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting one, because I vaguely remember when the Oilers were doing their thing in the 80s. I fully remember when Jordan and the Bulls were winning all those championships. I don't remember a fatigue. There was almost people wanted to see more of it. It kind of started with the Patriots a little bit in their second go around, that there was kind of this eye roll, Brady and Gronk and Edelman and company again. It's fascinating to me. Like, we want to see greatness. We want to see the best of the best. And then when you see it, there's almost this exhaustion, this fatigue, this whatever you want to call it about it. And then when it's all over, you look back and say, man, he was the GOAT. He was the best. Like, we have these GOAT conversations. And then when it's happening right before our eyes, mm-hmm. there's a fatigue with it. It just doesn't add up to me. Like, if Kansas City wins on Sunday, you think about the great dynasties in football history, from the Steelers of the 70s, San Francisco of the 80s, the Cowboys of the 90s, twice New England. None of them won three in a row. This would be Mahomes' fourth ring before the age of 30. I was chatting with Drew Brees today. He said, I played the best football of my career between age 38 and 42. So the fact that Mahomes can get to four and there's so much runway left in his career, the comp may not just be Brady if Mahomes wins tomorrow. The comp may be Bill Russell as the greatest champion in sports history. That's what's on the line here on Sunday in terms of the trajectory of where Mahomes can go, not just in football history, but sports history.
You think that's weighing on him at all? That's a lot of pressure. Is he built to be able to overcome that, to find a way to not let the noise and the accolades and the three-peat and the first time to do XYZ get to him and to play a pretty clean football game?
I mean, I've yet to see Patrick Mahomes blink in his entire career. You know, seventh year as a starter. He's lost three playoff games his whole career. As a young pup to Brady, all because somebody lined up offsides. They lost to Tampa Bay and Brady in the Super Bowl because he didn't have an offensive line, was under siege. And then Cincinnati just beat him in the AFC Championship game. Otherwise, what is he, 17-3, 18-3, something like that? You know, how many times have we seen fourth quarter comebacks from Mahomes and company? How many times has, out of nowhere, you're like, okay, this is the week that they're going down. This is the week where it's not going to happen, and he continues to deliver. I don't know if there's a clutch gene, but I'll tell you, Eilish, you know, Paul Pierce always said, some guys have it. You can't buy it at CVS. You can't buy it at Walgreens, Pierce would say. But you either have it or you don't, and Patrick Mahomes has all of it. I don't think he's worried, nervous, anything like that at all.
Yeah, if he was even, like, a notch short of 100 out of 100 on the unfazed scale, they're not in this position. Like, they would have tripped up at some point because in the most important moments, he is pretty much and has been pretty much perfect. Speaking of perfection, we're talking to Arash Madani from New Orleans, site of Super Bowl 59. I mean, the Eagles roster is as close to perfect as you can get on both sides of the ball, and we're taking the quarterback out for 1 second. But Jalen Hurts played one of his best games of all time in his career at the Super Bowl they lost to Kansas City a couple years ago. If it's a repeat performance of what Jalen Hurts did, given the upgrades at pretty much every position on both sides of the ball for Philadelphia, like, is it possible that they can lose this game?
Sure, of course. I mean, turnovers, deflected passes, fumbles, special teams. I mean, so much can happen in a football game. It doesn't come down to one player, and it doesn't come down to one play. You know, you look back even just a couple of weeks ago how KC beat Buffalo. A return from a player who'd been on the practice roster for most of the season was a defining play in that game. The fact that KC came on a corner blitz where they kept checking out of it throughout the night, and then when it really mattered, they brought it. Josh Allen played a pretty decent game. But Jalen Hurts, you think back to Super Bowl 57, you think back to the NFC title game against Washington, all he continues to do is perform. And I really think that when you think about how this game is going to unfold, obviously the engine of this Philadelphia offense is Saquon Barkley. So Kansas City's defensive game plan will be centered around that run game. What will that mean? Well, it means a couple of linebackers are going to be trickling downhill because they're going to want to contain him. It means they may even cheat with one of their safeties. So A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith out on the perimeter are going to see a lot of man-to-man, which is why Philadelphia's vets are out there on the island man-to-man with Slay and Gardner Johnson. What this now creates is the middle of the field to have some real estate. And to me, guys, the player that can make a real impact is Dallas Goedert. Outside of Kelce, there may not be a better tight end who can feel and find space. And we've already seen Goddard's ability to be a pass catcher, to bring things in. But the chemistry that he has with Hurts, that he'll cut off a route even though the playbook says it's supposed to extend, they have a real chemistry here. And I think with the way Kansas City wants to defend Barkley, with the ability and kind of connection that Hurts and Goddard have, I think the quarterback tight end combo to watch is not Kansas City's. I think it's Philadelphia's.
We're talking to Rasha Madani, and we can tell that the sun is setting. It's just very interesting to watch.
It really is.
It's darker and
what
darker.
You're not seeing, what you're not seeing is camera operator Mario Fontana, producers Ryan Walsh and Ryan Moyne scrambling with lights here.
I was curious how they were keeping you lit. You look great. that's good.
They haven't lifted the sun. They're just adjusting the lights. That's what's happening.
Okay, we've got time for about one more for you, Rash. We appreciate it and the efforts behind the scenes. So Josh Allen wins MVP last night. I just was curious more of the reaction around, you know, you're in the hub, what people were saying about him getting his first MVP award.
I think it was expected. I find it fascinating that the offensive player of the year is not the MVP. Saquon wins OPOY, but the MVP, does the MVP have to be a quarterback? Is that the new rule now in,
seems so.
In sports? Yeah. Look, it could have gone to Allen, it could have gone to Lamar, it could have gone to Saquon. But Josh Allen's regular season was outstanding. I can't think of a player, and especially a quarterback, when you think of how raw they were coming out of college, even as a first-round pick, to what they've evolved into now. Lamar from the jump was special. Saquon, when he arrived in the NFL, was dominant. Josh Allen had a lot of work to do, ball security being among them. And look at the season that he's had. Now, the question is, when? When will Buffalo put it together in January to do it? And they're not going to make a coaching change in Western New York. The other question to me is, can it happen with Sean McDermott? Because over and over again, in the biggest moments, in the biggest times, coaching has been Buffalo's problem. It hasn't been quarterback. He's the best in the game.
Yeah, he had a great quote last night. I wrote down, be good, do good, God bless, and go Bills. So I think that's getting tattooed on a lot of rib cages. And,
that's very Buffalo, isn't it?
Buffalo. A lot of people got that tattooed this morning with the picture of Josh Allen. Well, Rash, we appreciate all your time. Have the best on Sunday, and looking forward to all of the coverage you bring to us. Appreciate it, and have fun.
All right, guys, enjoy.
That's Rash Madani, Sportsnet reporter. And, man, that quote.
Super Bowl this week for Rash.
Yeah.
NBA All-Star Game next week.
When we talk to him next week, we'll get a little more time to be like, how's your life been?
Yeah, we got to do the life debrief. I don't know when the off-season is for Rash, but once we hit the off-season, we'll debrief.
Be good. 2024, do good. 25. God bless and go Bills.
Are you getting that tattooed?
I might. If they win a Super Bowl, I'll definitely get that tattooed.
Okay. It's on record.
Like, in the next, like, couple years, not when it's, like, you know, I don't want to do it when it's not Josh Allen.
If Josh Allen wins the Super Bowl, I think that's
a
fair...
We'll shake on it.
Can't reach.
My poor mother's going to text me in about 30 seconds. You're not getting a tattoo. Anyway, it was great to see him win his first MVP. And, you raised your eyebrows when Arash said it was expected.
Yeah, I was surprised in the moment. I was surprised that he said that because... you could debate it all you want, but Lamar Jackson was named the All-Pro starting quarterback in the NFL.
And only one time ever did All-Pro not win the MVP.
Translate. So there was a group of voters, like at least, I think, 5, 6, 7, if I read it correctly, or I understand it correctly, that basically decided the best quarterback was Lamar Jackson, but the most valuable player in the league was Josh Allen. And that's like the sort of categorization that I think can only be explained by they didn't want to give Lamar Jackson 3 in a row. And that's not to diminish Josh Allen's MVP.
I wear my Bills sweater today.
And you'll be tattooed because of the Bills in the near future here. But that's what it tells me, because you can only make that decision in your head if you're trying to fit it into your own narrative about where Lamar Jackson stands in the grand scheme of things, what you may have thought about Josh Allen's season last year when he probably should have won MVP. I think a lot of people, or at least select people, were doing things in a way to make sure the outcome was more palatable. We'll just say that.
Well, he had a wonderful speech, and he's a wonderful guy, and that's my MVP.
It was a wonderful speech.
So good to see it. All right, we'll take a quick break. We're going to be joined by Shayna Goldman of The Athletic in about 10 minutes to go through some of the Four Nations face-off questions that we need answered before it starts. And there's only a couple days left of hockey before we focus strictly on international best on best. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Let's keep going with our Super Bowl chat. We just chatted with Arash Madani from New Orleans. Have you been to New Orleans?
I have not.
Neither have I.
Have you?
No, I'd like to go. I wanted to ask him more about like what he's been eating and what the vibe's like.
It'll be the off-season check-in.
Yeah. Other X factors for us as we go through this game on Sunday.
One of mine is Devontae Smith. Arash kind of mentioned it, how it's going to look if you stack the box against Saquon Barkley. That means it's going to be one-on-one on the outside with two really, really talented receivers. And I think if the priorities for the Chiefs defense are such that, okay, we got to limit Saquon, number one, and then we got to take out their best receiver, number two, well, that leaves room for a really good number two receiver in Devontae Smith to potentially get loose. So I think it's possible that Devontae Smith against the second-best corner the Chiefs has a big game. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have to use the passing, get the passing game going in order to beat the Chiefs. And I think Devontae Smith, despite his assertion that Dallas Goedert might be the guy, I think Devontae Smith is just as good of a candidate and more of a game breaker than Dallas Goedert.
I've seen a lot of Dallas Goedert talk online.
Yeah, that's kind of spooking me a little bit.
Right now.
Everyone's all over Dallas Goedert. And for that reason, I think I'm going with Devontae Smith.
Okay. I'll pick a Kansas City Chief, Isaiah Pacheco. You know, he was
an interesting one.
He was injured for a lot.
Broke his leg.
Yes. That's why I think what is the term X factor? Someone that you're not really expecting
okay.
the most from, for me. Like, obviously, X factor, Patrick Mahomes. So I think Isaiah Pacheco could be an interesting one because he hasn't been the guy lately. And I think they'll plan for him to be a bit more focal in the plans to have him more involved. But if he's fully healthy and he's not banged up, we know he's a big runner. He's electric. He can be dynamic. And I think that's where I think of X factor. Someone that you're not expecting to have a massive game plays into it. So I have him as an option for the Kansas City Chiefs. But we didn't talk about how we talked about how the Eagles would defeat the Chiefs, right? You were answering that when we brought
that was my answer. On. What's your answer to that?
Yeah, I think I'm interested in this whole tush push because it's probably getting banned. And who's good at the tush push? The Eagles. But I know that the Chiefs shut down the Bills. I was there. Mm-hmm. No, I wasn't there for that one, but I was there witnessing it
in spirit.
But I mean, who is the tush push team?
Maestro.
Yeah,
Jalen Hurts.
Who's got it? It's him. And I think if they're going to be maybe banning this thing, and you saw how great that the Chiefs were at shutting down the Bills, I just think that they haven't been as good at defending Hurts on the tush push. I think he used it to score two touchdowns last Super Bowl. I think it could be an interesting thing just to keep an eye on. And the birthday boy, Saquon Barkley, as we mentioned, he's in my Eagles, how the Eagles win. And I agree with your early lead. But when we do our best bets, I kind of have a stat that kind of shuts that up a bit.
Okay.
The Chiefs, they're not afraid of early leads, unfortunately.
Yeah, so, they've been trailing in most Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Right? Which goes against what I said.
Yeah. I look at that and I think I'll have a way to profit on that.
I think it might be tougher against Philly, given just the talent on the roster and how, you know, it's score for score is something that could definitely happen in this game. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple things with the Chiefs offense that is interesting. Like you mentioned is Isaiah Pacheco as a potential X factor. The truth of the matter is for these playoffs, at the very least, they haven't been able to run the ball and they don't have game breakers mm-hmm. in terms of an A.J. Brown, even a Devontae Smith. In terms of their receiving core, like Travis Kelce is an all-time talent, but is he going to pop for 130 yards and a touchdown?
I feel like he's not going to have a big game. I say this now and watch he's going to score three touchdowns.
That's the problem.
I'm not feeling it.
I don't know who's going to have a big game for Kansas City.
Xavier Worthy, probably.
It's possible.
Just make our Bills fans feel even worse about ourselves.
It is definitely possible. If I
have
bet
him
guy,
sneaky Super Bowl MVP.
I think I got a little of him as well.
I love to just sprinkle a little bit on the Super Bowl MVPs.
But my take is that it's going to come down completely to Patrick Mahomes just making the right read on every single play. And we know he's very capable of that. And making the right read on every single play might mean going to a second, third option more often than not, spreading it around. Like, I could see the entire team, like, no one going for more than 60 yards, but Mahomes still having 300 yards in the game in a win. because they're going to have to use everybody.
That's why the X factors feel like it could be almost anybody.
Exactly.
It's not.
Noah Gray could score 2 touchdowns in this game.
I might have bet that. I just think when you look
at the tight ends.
Well, yeah. And when I played in my sorority football team, I was a tight end. So
I got that.
I just look at the Chiefs, and you're right. Anyone can have the big day. And that's a good thing. It's like coaching is an X factor. And I think, you know, like Andy Reid is the guy. Like, I just see that as a win in the Kansas City Chiefs column. Quarterback win in the Kansas City Chiefs column. Maybe everything else equals out in a sense. Like, this is a great defense, the best defense versus a great offense. But those decisions of being in it and have won before, like if you're the Chiefs and you have Andy Reid who knows how to win in big moments, it's just, I was listening just like to a bunch of previews and a good point that kept coming up and keep reading about it on sportsnet.ca is just like there's so much more time in a Super Bowl in the halftime too. Like, you come back, you got like a 30-minute halftime. You get more TV breaks. There's just more time to come back and be like, okay, let's game plan for this. Let's make adjustments. And who's better than that? Yeah, Andy Reid.
That benefits Casey unbelievably.
It's unbelievable. They can go into halftime, which they have, trailing. And they have so much more time to be like, let's do this. Let's change this. Here's the video. They're just so equipped for using and utilizing any of that extra time that you give them in a TV timeout, which you get more of, and the Super Bowl halftime show. I just look at it and I think the thing that's going to keep them from winning, it's hard to circle it.
Yeah, if every play was done like in simulation where there's no like fatigue factor or guys who are feeling a little banged up or what have you, like maybe a mental lapse because of something that happened earlier. If it was all just like the Chiefs running plays to the best of their ability versus Philly running plays to the best of their ability, I would favor the Chiefs because they are what they do from a design standpoint and an execution standpoint from the quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, is beyond anything I've ever seen before. When they need something to happen, they have the play to do it. And when there's time and that ability to actually go into the lab and make the right adjustments, that always favors a team like Kansas City.
Yeah, it's all stacking up against the Eagles. But the game still has to be played. All right, let's shift over to some hockey talk. We mentioned we're going to go through a little bit Four Nations and more with Shayna Goldman of The Athletic, the Too Many Men podcast. Shayna, I keep realizing we ask you on a Friday night to hold your plans and come on at 6:35 with us. Like, you can say no and ask for a Tuesday night if you want. I feel bad. We're keeping you from socializing.
Extending your work week.
It's fine. You know, the NHL has been extending my work week every Friday lately. So, you know, I already knew tonight, like, there's a good chance I'll be busy later.
I guess we should be bracing for a major trade.
I forgot. What's going to happen? What's your prediction? Who's getting traded?
Oh, yeah. We need a good prediction for this one. I mean, considering how surprising the first trade was, right? Like, last week we expected the Miller deal. The Pettersson one was a little bit out of left field. Should we just go big and say, like, something's going to happen with Dylan Cousins tonight and manifest something huge there?
Dylan Cousins is a Leafs. Shayna Goldman, you heard it here first. maybe not. I do want to go through some of the injury replacement options with you for the Four Nations, because that's actually something we could learn about quite soon. Monday, I believe, is the hard deadline. It's not as exciting. It is injury related, but let's look through the Canadian defenseman spot, because that's the one we've known for the longest time is available. Petrangelo deciding not to participate, and Drew Doughty seems to be maybe like the betting favorite, like the heart favorite. A lot of people really want to see him get an opportunity to represent Canada, but is he like the best pick hockey wise for Canada right now?
It's hard to say because he missed so much time this year, right? If we picked up where we left off last season, it would be like, yeah, he should be on that roster without a doubt. He's still a number one defenseman, right? And he's putting up great shutdown minutes with Mikey Anderson. Why not? But then he misses so much time. So it's really challenging to say because there are other guys who are playing really well. Like Mackenzie Weegar has been playing really well. That you're like, okay, that, you know, those are names that are going to be out there too. So it's difficult to say based on like what they're going with, but the fact that they waited this long makes me think they want to see how good Doughty's going to be to like confirm the decision that it seems like everybody wants.
Mm-hmm. Shayna, can you assess the level of damage it would be to the chances of the Americans if Quinn Hughes was unable to go?
Yeah, that's a tough one because that is your MVP caliber player right there, right? Like, he is everything and more. The way he transforms play when he is on the ice is something I feel like we haven't seen in a while from a defenseman, right? It's this new wave of defensemen, Cale Makar, Adam Fox, and Quinn Hughes coming up together, and they all play the game a little bit differently, right? They all have their own way of just controlling their minutes. So losing Quinn Hughes would be terrible. It wouldn't be to the same extent as it would be for Vancouver, because this is an all-star team versus whatever the Canucks are on a given night. So it works for them if they're going to have other players who can step up, right? Because you know you can have Zach Werenski run power play one and have no problem with it. You can let Adam Fox run those minutes too. And they have enough depth on that blue line that I don't think that they're going to be completely shorthanded. But when you look at the whole shift of USA Hockey, right, from the last time we saw them, you go back to 2014 and 2016, and it was that grinding two-way style to this, you know, shift to have more of a speed game and a possession-heavy game. He embraces that. He embodies that with everything and more. So I feel like it's a hit to just their identity overall and what they should be doing, and obviously their skill level in this.
Wouldn't it be terrible if Quinn Hughes and Sidney Crosby weren't able to play in the 4-inch faceoff? I know Crosby said to miss tonight's matchup versus the Rangers. Hopefully just precautionary, even though we did kind of, you know, give a little bit of shade to players that were holding out to play more in the 4-inch. Like, it's a weird dilemma, right? Because it's a tournament that's made up, but you're also representing your team. But this is it for Sidney Crosby, okay? The Penguins aren't going to win a Stanley Cup. He's probably got this opportunity and hopefully in Olympics. Like, I know you're not Canadian, so try to just believe what it would feel like for us to not have our captain, Sidney Crosby, to play at the Four Nations Face-Off. I think it's probably the most devastating blow to the whole tournament.
Yeah, it really could. It's a tough toss-up with him and Quinn Hughes right there, but it's huge because of everything he means to Team Canada, right? I personally want to see Sidney Crosby, and if you're USA, you want to win against the best, and the best means being led by Crosby. I know you can have anyone else slot to center. Canada has right now, I think, 7 players who are eligible to play center, if not 6, and I'm sure the replacement would also be a center, so if not, you know, there's you're still maintaining that number, right? You're going to get, instead of McKinnon potentially playing wing, he'll just play center instead. You have a ton of other options, but it's what it means. And when you look at the Penguins season and where they are and, I guess, aren't going, you want to see Sidney Crosby have fun for like 2 minutes this year, right? Like, let him enjoy himself. Let him compete for Team Canada. That I hope missing tonight's game is what's going to help him heal up to be ready for that.
Is there one player who's still not on a team, and again, things can still change, that it still bothers you that they're not going to be they're going to be on a beach and not involved in this tournament?
Yeah, I saw a lot about Cole Caulfield this year and Tage Thompson. I think there's a good case for both of them to be playing, but I think the biggest miss of all is Logan Thompson, because you think of Team Canada and where they're going to fall short to Team USA, and it's in net. And I think that you could have projected that he was a good option before he had this breakout season, right? Like, he's been good in Vegas for some time, that I'm a little surprised he didn't get the nod off the bat. I think he earned it relative to some of the other names out there. And even if you thought then, okay, so he's a number 3 and you envisioned him as that, and then he just so happens to, you know, start crushing it that now he's the true number 1 of the team, that's the bet to take.
Yeah, we were very disappointed with that one. And it continues to age very poorly. And the craziest thing about this, no Washington Capitals are going to the 4-inch faceoff, and they get a 2-week break. They're the best team basically in the NHL. They're leading the way, at least up at the top, and they all get to go rest and recoup and rehab and come back even stronger. So maybe they're just laughing now. They're all going to
Dubai with Ovechkin.
They might get some health shots there. You wrote a great article on The Athletic or about some of the center depth, and I know you just mentioned that, like how there's almost like too much of an abundance of center depth on all 4 of these teams at the Four Nations Face-Off. Like, how difficult is that shift to the wing? I mean, I usually was just a centerman, so I never had to really pivot over the wing, but sometimes it would throw you off. But now you're in a very short tournament where it's like every single line that jumps over is an all-star line, and some people might not be playing their main position.
Yeah, that's the challenge of it, because you're not doing it with your regular team, right? You're not doing it with teammates you're familiar with that you know their tendencies. So maybe if you're out of position, you know what they generally would do in this scenario. It's not within your team systems. Like, how long do you truly have to instill systems and say, this is what we're doing? And I know that on a certain level, every player knows the systems that are going to be run, right? Everybody knows what tactics are out there, and they have a good understanding that if you say, this is what we're doing it. But there's a reason you look at every year when the season starts and a new coach comes in and something changes. Like, there's an adjustment period almost every single time, because you can't snap your fingers and all of a sudden shift how you've been thinking for, you know, 50 games to this point, right? Plus however many years before that. So it's totally different adjustment. You're not as defensively responsible. You don't have to be as defensively responsible. You might be doing more work around the boards instead of roving around the middle of the ice. You don't have to keep your feet moving as much if you're playing on the wing. So it's all of those adjustments are going to make it a lot more challenging for players. But when you're doing it to play with an all-star center, right? If Sidney Crosby is playing, he's playing at center. So if you're Nathan McKinnon, you're shifting to wings to play with Crosby, he's going to make that a whole lot easier for him.
We are talking to Shayda Goldman ahead of the last weekend in the NHL before the first ever Four Nations face-off. It's going to be a lot of fun over the next couple weeks. But let's chat a little bit about the results since we've seen these Friday night trades that have rocked our collective worlds. I want to start with JT Miller because the Rangers have been playing pretty well since JT Miller has been very, very noticeable in his change from a one blue shirt to the actual blue shirt with the New York Rangers. How do you think he transforms the reality for New York here as they continue to chase down a wild card spot in what once was a lost season?
Yeah, I think two things can be true, right? I think that he makes the Rangers better. And we're seeing that already, right? He's bringing in energy to them because JT Miller, when he's clicking and he's at his best, he is incredibly effective, right? He can be a great two-way player. He's very physical. He's active on the forecheck. He gets to the net front area. He's doing all of that already, which is exactly what the Rangers needed. And who knew that Mika Zibanejad, who was the right winger he needed all along, since Pavel Buchnevich left, the question's been, who's going to play on Zibanejad's right? Well, the answer was him. Who knew? And he's clicking with Miller and Panarin. That line, I think, is outscoring opponents 3-2 and has like a 66% expected goals rate. They're doing what the Rangers need, and they look great on the power play as well. The other part of it is that I still don't think this team is a true contender. I think adding a player like JT Miller is the move that you make to take your contention status to be a true favorite for the Stanley Cup, right? Like, you want it that it takes you up a notch. You don't want it that you're a fringe playoff team. Maybe now you're with them and you're still on the bubble, right? Like, they weren't at the right phase for this, but obviously the opportunity forced the situation to happen sooner than expected. So they're a better team, but I think that there's still a lot of work to do, and you can see it throughout the rest of their lineup still, but it's a good start. And the fact that you get these moves done in early, like, you have time to assess your team with him in the fold and then decide what you still need to do from here.
I think when we look at that big three-way blockbuster that Justin's talking about, Marty Natchez, 7 games played, 3 goals, 5 assists. Maybe that's the most surprising. I mean, Mikko Rantanen, 6 games played, 1 goal, 1 assist. Taylor Hall, 5 games played, 0 goals, 1 assist. Jack Drury, 7 games played, 2 goals, 0 assists. So Marty Natchez is the one leading the way. What makes him a good fit there? And were people maybe underestimating what he could bring to the Colorado Avalanche?
Yeah, I definitely think people are underestimating him. And it was nothing about him. It was just the skates he had to fill in Rantanen, right? Because we all know Rantanen to be a game changer and to be one of those core players. And no one views Natchez in that regard yet. He hasn't earned it. He's a very good player. And you even look at when he was scoring a ton with the Canes this year, there were some suspect numbers below the surface. So it was no surprise when his scoring did slow down eventually this year. But he never had the talent to play with that he does now, right? Because he didn't really play with Sebastian Aho there. He wasn't getting those prime minutes for the Canes. He was on the second line for a lot of this year. When you're playing with the Avalanche, you're getting prime minutes. That means Nathan MacKinnon, Arturi Lehkonen, Devon Taves, and Cale Makar. I think he's playing 70% of his 5-on-5 minutes with Makar and Taves. That's going to help. But he has the ability to actually keep up, complement, and make them a better team. It's not that he's just riding anybody's coattails. He has the speed and skill to be a difference maker. And you have two zone entry machines between MacKinnon and Natchez. So you're just seeing that skill and that speed help transform the Avs in those minutes, which is what they need to do, right? Because there's still some issues in the middle of the lineup. But if their top line's going, it's going to get them a lot further. And it's really revitalized their power play, which was surprisingly terrible leading up to the trade. And I think some of it's too, like, you're seeing positional adjustments. And I think having Natchez play in the left circle obviously moves MacKinnon out of position, but it's allowing him to be a little bit freer in the offensive zone, which is never a bad thing.
Considering the flexibility for the Dallas Stars with the injuries, I was pretty underwhelmed with going out there and getting Cody Ceci and Mikael Granlund as a tandem from the San Jose Sharks. Am I too down on those additions?
No, I like the addition of Granlund. If we take out the price for a second, right, and just focus on the player, I think he's a good player. I think that he's a good player when he's in the right minutes. We saw him really struggle in Pittsburgh when he was on a third line that didn't get a lot of power play opportunity. He had no offensive support around him. With the Sharks, he got true top 6 minutes, and he got a lot of power play usage, and it helped his game kick it back up a notch. He's someone that is better on the wing than at center, and I think that's fine with Dallas because they have a lot of versatility, and they're a really good team that I think they can kind of hide his weaknesses and try to elevate some of his strengths. I think he'll be really good on their power play. But then you factor in the rest of the deal, and it's a full stop right there, because I know Cody Ceci is not going to play great minutes when Miro Heiskanen returns, and you just have to get to having their top pair back, having their best defenseman back. those minutes are going to be a lot tougher to weather with CeCe in the fold because he struggled so much in matchup minutes last year in Edmonton. The other part of it is, as much structure and strength as the Stars still have, that blue line is not what it was last year. Mm-hmm. I didn't like a lot of their moves in the summer, so I feel like now you're just adding more of the same, which is exactly what they don't need right now. And then you factor in the price, even with the fact that, you know, first round picks aren't what they usually are worth because it's a weaker draft class, it still is a really high price to pay.
Yeah, Cody CeCe. We know him around these parts. Shane, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
I'm going with the Chiefs. I feel like it's tough to bet against them. I just hope it's a good game and it's not like we're talking about the officiating after.
I agree. That's a very diplomatic answer. No officiating, but probably the Chiefs. And I think we're all on board. Well, we appreciate you hanging out on another Friday night. We'll promise to sprinkle in some weeknights that aren't, you know, ones that you might have things to do. But no trade in the last 10 minutes. So we're good for now. Thanks, Shana.
Thanks for having me.
That's Shana Goldman at The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast.
A reminder, this weekend, UFC 312 from Australia. It's a rematch of what we saw, middleweight title.
I know.
Dricus du Plessis versus Sean Strickland.
It's our rematch. I wish we were there.
What the UFC doing with Sean Strickland? Like, he came into our country and it was kind of like, he was disruptive.
Oh, he was offending
many people. And now he's in Australia offending many people the same way. Maybe
they
keep
like
him in Florida. Maybe keep him in Vegas. I'm not really sure what the strategy is there, but I don't know. People still talk about Sean Strickland, I guess, in these parts. Anyway, he's rematching with du Plessis for the middleweight title. See if Strickland can get the strap back. There's also a strawweight title on the line with Weili Zhang versus Tatiana Suarez. You can find that on Sportsnet Plus pay-per-view at 10 p.m. on Saturday night.
I have some breaking UFC news.
Ooh. Did I just give bad information?
No.
Are we losing another title?
No. It's not bad like that.
Okay.
The UFC is coming back to Montreal.
Mm.
The Bell Center is going to host UFC 315 on May 10th, 2025. So right around the corner.
There you go.
So we would like to throw our names in the hat to be ringside again.
Interesting. Too bad it's not Toronto, because we could probably
weasel
our way in there.
You can weasel your way to Montreal, like I'm still trying to do for next weekend's Four Nation Face-Off.
Yeah. Probably be out of pocket, unfortunately.
But that'd be fun. We had a blast. So this is UFC 312 and this weekend, and UFC 315 coming back to Canada, to Montreal.
There you go. That's very exciting. Maybe Sean Strickland can turn it around after winning the middleweight title.
That's a big...
And
big
see
ass.
If you can ruffle some feathers in
just
in
the
Quebec.
Jet lag alone from Australia.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do some best bets before we wrap up. Reminder, we got another 30 minutes on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, afterwards, and we're going to talk to Daniele Franceschi. We're going to talk about Raptors OKC, which is our big game on Sportsnet 1 tonight with a later tip in 8 p.m. That's why we've got a little bit more time teed up. Okay, shout out to producer David Sist for telling me that there are two birthdays tonight in the NHL.
Okay, Sist Man of the Year.
Sist Man
Stepping
of the Year.
Up.
We are going to place Stamkos goal plus 195 and Ryan O'Reilly goal plus 255. They both have a birthday tonight.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. And they're both, obviously, on the National Predators playing the Chicago
Blackhawks.
Are they
born on the exact same day? Like, they're both, Stamkos 91. Ryan O'Reilly's got to be
Ryan O'Reilly is a 91.
There you go.
And Steven Stamkos is a 90. Come on.
Oh, I thought he was 91 based on the number. My apologies.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're both birthdays tonight, so happy birthday, go score us a goal. Secondary bet I have for the big game is a way to profit on the Chiefs being good at coming back. So Eagles to win the first half, Chiefs to win the game, plus 670, which is wild. Mahomes has four straight playoff victories when trailing in the fourth quarter, which is longest streak by a quarterback of all time. Started in the Eagles Super Bowl, too.
I told you I didn't like that game strip, but because it's plus 670.
You have to do it.
If the Eagles have the halftime lead, it's going to look amazing. It's going to look like the best bet ever. An easy one to hedge, probably, if you're in that spot as well and believe in the Chiefs' comeback. Okay, so we mentioned it, Thunder and Raptors a little bit later on. We're going to bring Daniele in a second. Thunder are, well, they were at one point 20-point favorites. I think it went down to 18.5 last time I checked. And they've been blowing everyone out here lately. So I like the Thunder in the first half minus 11.5. Because Shea Gilgeous-Alexander has put, I think, 3 50-point efforts in the last couple weeks alone and just sits out the fourth quarter. It's unbelievable the run he's on. And if it's a true blowout and the Thunder stay true to what they do, they basically just play their reserves for the fourth quarter. So Thunder get an early lead on the Raptors with Chet Holmgren coming back. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good play tonight, first half Thunder. And I'm taking the over in the Super Bowl, over 48.5. I think that's a good pick. Like, these guys, I don't see much defense despite the quality with the Eagles. If it's going to be a game, that means the Chiefs are scoring. I think this one clears 48.5 pretty easily.
I love it. I also agree. Okay, so we'll take a quick break. We'll come back on Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next half hour, but to get you set for OKC and the Raptors, which we've got on Sportsnet. One, everybody have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy all the festivities. That was Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now.